Hi, this is Chris Rains from Spitfire and Sundrug, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
Back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, bringing it in with a little bit of Fugazi, Five Corporations. Not only is that a rad song, but it kind of ties in with the story from Chris Rains. You'll get to hear in a little bit. You stick around for the whole thing. I always try to wait until Saturday or just before I release a podcast to do the intro to try to keep it current and relevant. And right now, I am sitting in, it's Saturday evening, March 19th, I am sitting in Jay DeNito's basement in New Kensington, New Jersey, while Jeremiah from Metal Bandcamp Gift Club and Seth Werkheiser are upstairs playing Super Smash Brothers with Jay and his daughter. I came down here to do this intro because I wanted to put this intro off as long as I possibly could to tell you about this phenomenal weekend that we've been having. We just went to see Zayo last night, their first show in 4 years. Absolutely smashed the Altar Bar in Pittsburgh to bits. Nothing left standing. It was such a great show. Such a great time. So many great people there. I don't know where to start. This weekend's been phenomenal. What a cool ride out here. Just good fellowship and growth with two great friends. Really good stuff, man. I'm just excited to talk to everybody about it. I'm going to be putting some special little snippets and some extra pictures and everything that I won't release anywhere else. I'll be putting that up on my Patreon page. Wink, wink. I don't have to go any further into that. Y'all see what I'm trying to do there. Go to iTunes, leave reviews, say nice things about other people. Walk your dog. Try to exercise more. Drink more French pressed coffee. Next week, we're going to be talking to Sam West, the drummer from Stavesacre. How cool is that? I've been listening to that dude since I was a kid. So stoked to be able to talk to him. This week, we get to listen to Chris Rains from Spitfire and his new band called Sundrug. So many cool things came up during that talk. Had no idea that the guy owns his own businesses. He's running a body work, like an auto body repair business, I guess, best way to put it. Owned a record store for 3 years. Was in a bunch of bands that you've all heard of. Spitfire, Norma Jean. Such a great conversation. So stoked to tell you all about it. Come listen to Sam West next week. Go listen to the Zayo stuff from last week. Biggest episodes I ever had. Ever. Can't thank you all enough. It's led to so many cool experiences, so many cool conversations. There's a lot of cool stuff coming down the pike. Got a lot of plans. Hope you're all as excited as I am. I want to give a shout out to my buddy Jacob. Finally got to meet the bearded warrior face to face out in Pittsburgh here. He drove all the way out here too. The kid is crazy. And his buddies Caleb and Ethan. Super cool that they came to hang out with us. We all got to break bread and hang out with the band and other band people. Such a great time. We walked into this. We went to this sandwich shop. We couldn't get in there because there was a private party. And so we decided to go up the street to this, like a like a grill bar, whatever pub thing. We walked in, the girl was like, "How many are in your party?" We and 16. They totally freaked out. They're like, ah! So we took over the one dining room of this one bar and got fish tacos the size of a canoe. It was awesome. Such a great time. Okay, let's get going over with Chris Raines. Thanks again, everybody, for the support. Amazing weekend. More amazing things coming down the pipe. Perfect. Nailed it the first time. Congratulations.
What do I win?
One take. You get the title of One Take Chris. How's that?
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming on the show, my man. I guess we owe a thanks to, I guess the first person to recommend you was Corey.
Cool.
After speaking to him, he said, yep. I can hook you up with a ton of people. And
yeah.
He threw your name out there. He said he'd be perfect to talk to you.
Awesome.
So here we are. What's Chris Raines up to down there in Virginia?
Lots of stuff. Being a dad.
How many kids?
I have twins.
You have twins?
I have six-year-old twins.
Shut your lying mouth. I have twins.
Do you really?
13-year-old boy, girl. Yep.
No way. I have 6-year-old boy, girl.
How about that?
Yeah.
High five.
Yeah. Ding.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I have that. I mean, I have, you know, music stuff going on, but, you know, it's family stuff.
Yeah.
We're about to start spring baseball again.
Are you a coach?
So, yeah, I coach.
I coached baseball.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah, I coach. This is fourth season that I've coached because we do spring and fall. And he's super into it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's awesome, man. But yeah, just being a dad and yeah, it's good times.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so funny. What a small world.
Yeah.
6 years old would be 1 year after T-ball?
Yeah. Well, yes, he started Coach Pitch last fall.
Coach
so this will be his second time. But it's weird. I don't know if it was the same when you coached. It's not actually a coach pitching. They use machines.
Oh, no, we did coach pitch.
Okay. It's called coach pitch, but we actually use a machine, which is cool. It just kind of takes out user error.
Right. Gotcha.
It just, you know, for the most part, unless the machine's broke, it just throws a strike every time. So
it's no, nice. We said we tried pitching to the kids until it was just like fruitless. It was like 25
yeah.
swings of nothing. And it was like, okay,
oh, yeah.
And then we'll put it on a tee. Now
yeah,
we never
okay,
use any
yeah.
machines.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
What a small world. What's the daughter into? What does she do?
She's all girl. He's all boy. She's all girl. He's
okay.
obsessed with Star Wars and baseball and what have you. And she's all about being a girl.
Got it.
She was just finished swimming lessons and just, yeah, being a girl. Girl stuff, princess stuff, you know.
Gotcha.
She's kind of very, we joke around, she has a mall walk is what my wife and I call it. Like if we go to the mall, like she kind of is in front of us and she has this very like feminine, like I'm the jam walk that she does.
You're kidding me.
It's amazing.
Six
she's very
years
independent.
Old already?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's been like that since she was like three.
Oh, brother, hang on to your hats. Wait till
I know.
She wait till she runs into that hormonal wall at 13. Oh my God, dude.
Well, how many kids do you have?
I have three.
Okay.
We had twins in 2002, the boy,
right.
boy girl, and I have an 8-year-old son who was born in 2007.
Cool.
And that is that. We are
yeah.
done.
Yeah, and, same here.
And a dog.
Same here.
Mm-hmm. So what part of Virginia?
Virginia Beach.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it's nice. I've lived here my whole life, except for I went to college in D.C.
Okay.
And besides touring, I've always been here. Grew
Great.
Up here and stayed here. Got married when we finished college, and that was pretty much that. Been here ever since.
Nice.
Yeah. But,
and tell me a little bit about how you got started. We all know you from Spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're in a new project with Jimmy from Spitfire originally
right.
Called Sundrug.
Right.
So let's do the whole
normal.
Sure.
Like, you know, start from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it started in, I guess, it's here's kind of how it started. It's a funny story. Like, I always had a huge interest in music.
Okay.
You know, I was kind of like, you know, in elementary school on the bus, listening in the Sony Walkman to Metallica and Megadeth records. And,
nice.
You know, like, always loved music from the beginning. I have two older sisters, and my parents had kind of forced them to play the violin and the flute and the piano and all this stuff. And they bought all these instruments and spent all this money. And then I come along and I wanted drums, and they pretty much laughed at me and were like, we're not doing that again. So I would
thanks, parents.
So I would take the church youth group drums, which were absolute garbage. Like, if I remember correctly, somebody at the church made them, like, in his garage. Mm-hmm. So I would take those home on Wednesday nights and play, you know, start teaching myself how to play drums, and then I would have to take them back on Sunday for church. Mm. So that's what I did. And then when I was, I did that, I guess I started playing drums when I was around 14-ish. And then when I was 15, I got a job working at a Christmas tree lot, like being the kid who like ties the trees on top of the cars to get cash. So I did that and saved up money, got my first kit. And
What?
Yeah.
Which kit? What'd you get?
It was a CB700.
Yes! I love the CB700. What a pile of shit.
It was a red CB700.
Nice.
And I want to say maybe I paid $350 for it.
If you paid $150, you overpaid.
Yeah. So, you know. Yeah, exactly. So I got this red CB700 kit and was stoked because I didn't have to bring home the church drums every week anymore.
Sure.
And brought it home, set it up in the bedroom. My parents were always, you know, once I got the drums, they were always rad about, like, supporting me and, like, cool with me playing. Uh-huh. And I would come home from school every day, and I would put on a Nirvana record or a Pearl Jam record and play it as loud as I could, and that's how I taught myself how to play drums. And
atta boy.
Yeah. So then Matt,
you know what,
Jimmy,
you know what CB700 kits are really for, right? Those are the ones you use in the video if at the end you're going to kick them over. Or
exactly.
Light them on fire or throw them through a window or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are they still, I wonder if they're, I don't think they're still around.
Part of me hopes not. Part of me really hopes they are.
Yeah, I haven't seen or heard that name in so many years.
Yeah.
You know, so many of these major drum guys make really nice lower end stuff now.
Yeah, they do.
So I don't think you have to have that. I mean, like, DW does PDP and that stuff's like super nice. Like, my son has a PDP kit.
Yeah, they're fine.
So yeah, they're really nice. But anyway, so Matt and Jimmy and I grew up in church together.
Okay.
Matt and Jimmy from Spitfire. So, Matt came from a very musical family. Dad's a guitar player, brother's extraordinary bass player. And so he got a guitar, you know, and started playing. So we started playing music and stuff and needed a bass player. Jimmy didn't play any instruments or anything like that. So we told him we would teach, you know, Matt would teach him how to play the bass. So basically he got a bass and Matt kind of taught him how to play, and before we knew it, we were, you know, writing songs and touring and, you know, playing Cornerstone and putting out a demo and all that kind of stuff. And then I guess one thing led to another, and, you know, we met Zayo and met Training for Utopia and,
oh, nice.
And you know, all those kinds of guys, and they started taking us on tour, and it just all happened so quick. I mean, we were 15, 16, we started, and then, you know, I feel like within 6, 7, 8 months, we were, you know, on the road and doing whatever we could, and bands that we really looked up to, like Zayo and Training and all those guys, were taking us on tour. So it was pretty amazing.
How did the door open up from 16-year-old youth group kids that all played together to Solid State? Like, what was the bridge?
I think the bridge was trying to get on any local show we could get on. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a Living Sacrifice. It might have been Reborn tour. And Zayo was opening, but it was the Splinter lineup. So, you know, Jesse and Roy and I can't remember if the singer was named. But anyway, we opened for them. So it was Spitfire, Zayo, and Living Sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of hit it off with the Zayo guys. And Jesse and I really hit it off. And just kind of became buddies. And then they came through again not too long after that, and we played together again. And then just, like I said, we just kind of became buddies. And then they the whole Blood and Fire thing happened, and they kind of blew up, and they started taking us on tour, and you know, we did tours together and Cornerstone together, and just had a lot of good times and funny stories. And it was funny because at the time, like, we were just so set on, oh, we've got to be on Solid State. Like, there's nothing better.
Right.
We were just, I don't know.
At the time, you were right. If you were, if you were a religious-based, Christian-based band, whatever title or box you want to throw it in, Solid State was
the landing ground
for it. Yeah.
It was. And so, you know, I used to harp on Jesse from Zao all the time, like, you know, we got to get on Solid State. And I remember Jesse always being like, you don't want to get on, like, go somewhere else.
Really?
But, you know, yeah, totally. But, you know, we were young and we were like, no way, man. That's like, that's where training for Utopia is and Zao and whatever Tooth and Nail bands we might have liked at the time. I can't even remember who was around then. But so anyway, so that ended up happening, obviously.
Help me out with the timeline here. If you guys were falling in love with the Solid State idea and Zao was just getting into the Blood and Fire stuff, that was just as Solid State was starting. It was pretty much all Tooth and Nail up to that point, and Solid State forked off and started all the metal stuff.
Because I want to say that maybe like Strong Arm, Advent of a Miracle or something was like the first Solid State release.
Yeah, I think it was.
Something like that. So that was like 98. 97, 98, we started touring a lot. And I think our first record came out in 99. On Solid State.
And that first record was Dead Next Door.
Correct.
It's okay, everything's okay.
That's the one we all had. That was the one with the matchbook on the cover, right?
I remember that. Yeah. So, and that was another like dream for us. You know, like we kind of had set like, I guess, certain goals in our head. And, you know, one of them was to like be able to play shows with, you know, Zao or, you know, Living Sacrifice or whoever. And then it was to be on Tooth and Nail. And then our next one was to record at Trax East.
Nice.
Which this is a really cool story too, because for us, you know, like we were obsessed with Dead Guy. And Lifetime and all these bands that recorded at Trax East. It was a huge deal to us.
You are almost my 50th. You're almost the 50th guest. You're the first person to mention Lifetime.
Really?
I love Lifetime.
Somebody else has mentioned Dead Guy?
Yes. Me.
Oh, that's cool.
I mentioned Dead Guy constantly. You're the first person to bring up Lifetime. I've been waiting. Dude, I loved Lifetime.
Yeah. So there was a lot of other bands that recorded there too. You know, but those Dillinger. Were like, you know, Dead. Yeah. Dillinger, maybe we hadn't quite got there yet. Because in fact, when we were recording Dead Next Door, Steve Evitz played us Dillinger. And I remember just being like, I give up. Like
I quit. Here's my sticks.
Yeah, like, I remember Matt and I just looking at each other, just being like, I don't understand. Like, they just, basically, Ben invented a completely new style of music. And
Chris,
it's the best
Chris Penny,
I've ever
Chris
heard
Penny
in my
just
life.
Broke my brain. I quit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so we hadn't, you know, for us, we were just hearing Dillinger.
Right.
But so, yeah, so we recorded, you know, we got to record with Steve Evitz. But the story around that is actually kind of cool. Stretch Armstrong, they signed to Solid State right around the same time as us. They were kind of getting a lot of attention, you know, like kind of, you know, I think it was maybe at the time a big deal for Solid State to sign Stretch Armstrong. They, you know, they were going to, you know, sign this band that was already really established and people really liked. So they scheduled to go to Trax East. And we were kind of like this baby band, so we weren't really in any position to say, like, well, we're recording at Trax East or we're out. They were just like, no, like, you know, we're going to send you where we're going to send you, you know, for 6 days, basically. Like, it wasn't some ridiculous thing where you're like, oh, yeah, we're going to record a record for 2 months.
Right.
So they scheduled us to go to Barry Pointer, which I don't know if you know, but that's, you know, a lot of old Living
Sacrifice, where everyone,
early Zayo.
Where everyone recorded, right, right.
Exactly. And I'm sure part of that was probably, my guess would be Solid State Tooth and Nail was probably paying dirt price, cheap prices and getting decent recordings. So anyway, we were supposed to go there. Something happened at the last minute. Stretch Armstrong had to like postpone and move their time. So we basically got their Tracks East time slot. Which was amazing. So we got in, I think we did that, we did Dead Next Door in 5.5 days, and we came in literally like as Turmoil was leaving. They had just finished, I don't remember what record they were just finishing, but they were just leaving as we were coming in.
Turmoil's from my hood.
Yeah, great band, great guys.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Good band. So anyway, so that was pretty much it. So we did Dead Next Door and did some touring and stuff, and it was going well, and then life happened, and we just kind of, like, a couple of us kind of decided there was different things we wanted to do, and some of us were just ready to just take on the world and tour, and some of us, and our parents thought we should go to college, so it kind of put some things on hold for a minute.
Sure.
And so we went on and we kept playing and we did what we could. And then Matt left the band for a short period of time. Now, being a three-piece, Matt played guitar and sang.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you and he were the only steady members from the beginning. Turns out you're the only one.
Correct.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Now, this is a short period of time, but he was out of the band for a while. So at this point, we needed a singer. So I never went to a lot of shows. Because we played so much, you know, like we toured so much that I was never like, oh, I'm going to every local show.
Right.
Anyway, I went to this show, this band Scarlet played. I don't know if you ever heard Scarlet or not.
Only because of the Spitfire family tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I just like freaked out. Like, this band's super good and the singer like is ridiculous. Like, you know. So anyway, I introduced myself after the show and, you know, within a week I was begging him to join Spitfire. John Spencer is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically he joined Spitfire to sing, and then the guitar player of Scarlet, Randy, joined Spitfire to play guitar since Matt was no longer in the band. So we did that for a short period of time and, you know, kept touring. And then Matt came back at a later point. We did an EP, and then it just kind of all just kind of fizzled out again, and we didn't do anything
right
for a pretty long stretch of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got back together again in 2006. And,
okay, slow down before you get into 2006. I saw you guys play Mac Rock in 2002 because my band played there.
Right.
We were discussing that through email. That was supposedly Spitfire's farewell show.
It was.
Because I remember watching you guys. The show was phenomenal. And I remember the vocalist, which would have been this dude from Scarlet.
That was John, yes.
John had women handing him roses.
Yes, I remember.
And I just remember being like, damn. <That's right. laughs> Like, this genre doesn't have...
That's John Spencer, dude.
Yeah, right. That this genre does not have women handing singers roses. They usually just have 13-year-old guys getting their noses elbowed in the pits, you know? And I was just wow, Spitfire's doing something a little different down here.
And if I remember correctly, we played, we never ever played cover songs, but I feel like that night we played Helmet. The first song on Meantime.
Unsung?
No, not Unsung.
Oh, In the Meantime.
Maybe, I don't remember which one, but we played a Helmet song that night, I'm pretty sure.
First track or like the first hit off that album?
No, first track.
Oh, I don't remember.
Hold on.
Yeah, I could Google that.
Yeah. All right. Well, never mind. I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember. I don't remember you doing a Helmet song, but I don't remember much because we were like, you know, getting ready to leave and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one. Playing that Mac Rock is the one time where I tell people, yeah, my old band opened for Fugazi.
Oh yeah.
Which is bullshit because we didn't even play on the same day. But yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah. That Fugazi show was great too.
I missed it.
That was like
error. I bought the digital download of it because my vocalist stuck behind and he was like, dude, you got it. You should have seen that show. Ian yelled at everybody because they wouldn't close the doors. It was like -1,000 outside. And he was like, we're freezing, we're uncomfortable on stage, close the doors, and no one would do it. He's like, fine, we won't play. And then years later, he started putting out all the live Fugazi stuff. And I was like, I'm going to go download that show. I want to hear it. Yeah. So I have it now.
I need to do that. And I knew about those releases. I just haven't gone after any of them. But I saw Fugazi 5 or 6 times.
Oh.
And I... There wasn't a show that Ian didn't yell at people for something. that's real. I mean, that's totally real. Like,
I've never seen Fugazi. Shame on me.
Favorite bands. I think we saw them for the first time here in Norfolk when we were like 15. And then, you know, then we saw them at Mac Rock. And then when I went to school in DC, we saw them, I feel like, you know, at least once a year when I lived in DC.
That makes sense. Sure.
Yeah. But he always had something to yell at somebody about. I remember one great one. They actually played at the college I went to, and this dude in the audience just kept screaming for them to play Five Corporations.
Okay.
Like, so in between songs, you know, like when there's a little bit of quietness, this guy's just screaming
Corporations. He's the Freebird guy, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like, he's begging for this song. And, you know, whatever. You don't think much of it. There's always people screaming for certain songs, whatever.
Right.
So he does it, you know, for 30 minutes or something. Ian MacKay just freaks out and starts screaming at this dude, like, I don't come to your place of work and scream at you on how to do your job and all this. I mean, like, just went off on the guy. But that's another one that I'm like, I want to go get that download because I think it would be funny to listen.
That's what he does. I've like I said, I've never seen them, but I got the impression that, like, it's kind of like going to see that comedian that works the crowd and insults people.
Totally.
Like, like, just enjoy the show, be quiet. Right. Don't do anything loud or obnoxious. He's coming after you. Yeah.
That's right.
Whatever, dude. Yeah. Great. Every live song I've ever heard from them was murder. So
yeah.
Just
so good.
Pay your $5 and shut up, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Such a great band. Yeah.
Anyway, it wasn't cool. Farewell. Back to 2006, right?
Yeah, so 2005, I guess, came around, and Matt and I just started... He came over one night, and I remember we were just hanging out and, like, being kids again, kind of on the floor, like, putting on CDs and records and listening to Coalesce and stuff and just being like, dang, we should do this again. And so we did. We just started writing some stuff, and Jimmy was with us here in Virginia Beach, and we started writing some stuff, and then... Jimmy ended up moving to Florida right at that time, so we
What did he move for?
Let's see, if it was 2000, I think we were already done with college, so no, you know what? He must have been moving to New York, not Florida.
Okay.
He moved to New York for a girl, and they later on got married.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we got another bass player and wrote Self-Help and recorded Self-Help and toured a bunch and did everything for that record. And then we did, a couple years later, we did the Cult Fiction record. Kind of one of those, like, I don't know, I guess every musician, you know, I remember when you talked to Corey, you asked him to rank his favorite Norma Jean record.
Somebody else asked me to ask Corey to rank his favorite.
Oh, okay.
I was just the waiter at that point. I hate asking those questions because people are always like, oh, come on, dude, that's such a hard question.
No, but it is a hard question, but the reason I brought that up was because Cult Fiction, like, just didn't get a lot of attention. It was bad timing. It was bad timing for a number of reasons. One, Goodfellow Records was just kind of going under at the time. It was kind of the last thing they put any money into, whatever little money he had left.
Right.
And within a month of completing the record, I joined Norma Jean. So it was like,
oh yeah,
it just never really got the attention that we felt it deserved, because it was really something special for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we loved everything that we did, but John and Dan and I, and Matt was in the band at the same time as well, but John and Dan and I just really put a lot into it, and I guess we just really felt like we did something different.
Okay.
And we recorded that at Tracks East. That time we recorded with Eric Rachel, who's kind of like the original Tracks East guy. Great dude. And so yeah, that's kind of the Spitfire story though. And then it just kind of got put on hold.
So I'll do my best and you fill in all the blanks when I'm wrong, but
yep.
Daniel Davison left the drumming throne for Norma Jean to go to Under Oath?
No, not yet. I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Okay.
But basically, everything has changed since. Daniel's in Every Time I Die now. But at the time, the band wasn't Christian enough. And that's why Daniel left.
Daniel left Norma Jean.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a lot of weirdness there, I think, for a while.
Okay.
I think all of that's smoothed over now.
Okay.
But at the time, I think there was some weirdness there.
Gotcha.
So I got a call from Scotty, and Scotty and I had become close because he actually came and did a little bit on self-help. Scotty actually came and recorded some guitars, and he really wanted to be a part of Spitfire, and we really wanted him to be a part of Spitfire, but, I mean, there was no time. I mean, Norma Jean tours constantly. Like, he couldn't just, you know, come do it. But when he could, he did. He would come to Virginia Beach and play, and he did play some shows with us on the self-help era.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do any full tours or anything, but he did come and play shows when he could. So him and I became close, and I literally got a call one day, and it was just like, Daniel quit. We want you. We're not trying anyone out. We're not asking anyone else. You know, that was it. And at the time, I owned a record store. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. In Chesapeake, Virginia, which is, you know, like kind of, it's just a neighboring city of Virginia Beach. So I owned this record store, and I had owned it for about 3 years, I guess, which was great for the band thing because, you know, I just had a couple people working for me, and it was killer because I could go on tour, and these, my friends that worked there were, you know, stoked to work, you know, kind of lead the record store while I was gone. So it was never a big deal to tour. It wasn't like I had some corporate job that I had a problem with leaving.
Right.
So, so I got that call, and I said, give me a day or two, and I talked to my wife and prayed about it and stuff. And then at the same time, we were having these conversations of like, man, I'm getting worried about the record store because vinyl records hadn't quite taken off yet. And CDs were just dumping. Like, I mean, nobody
this would have been,
CDs.
This would have been what
this was, been... this was 06, 07.
Oh yeah.
No, more 07, more 07.
That's about the bottoming out years for vinyl. Yeah.
Yes. So vinyl was, people were starting to get into it, but it wasn't what it is now, where like people were going crazy for it, and CDs were really on their way out. So business was getting slow. And as much as I loved it, you know, there's still that, well, I have to make money. I mean, that was the same thing with being a musician. I can't, you know, I wasn't 16 anymore, so I couldn't just do whatever I wanted and not make an income.
Yeah.
So we'd already kind of started having those talks of like, what are we going to do? Should we try to just sell off what we have? You know? And then I got that call. So it just was like a perfect situation. So like I said, we talked about it for a few days and I called him back and said, I'm in. And, so I flew down to Atlanta and,
what'd you do with the record shop? Still owned it?
No. Yeah. I guess at that time I did probably still own it. Okay. What ended up happening, though, there was a record store in Richmond, Virginia called Plan 9 or Plan B or Plan... I can't remember.
Okay.
But it was a pretty decent-sized record store. It might even still be there. I just haven't been to Richmond in a long time.
Okay.
But they basically bought everything I had.
Oh.
So they didn't like, buy my store and take over the store. They just, whatever I had, they pretty much came in for a day or two, did a bunch of reports, gave me an offer, bought everything... bought my racks, you know, all that kind of stuff. And because they had multiple locations. I think they had one in Harrisonburg at JMU, where Mac Rock was.
Mm.
I think they had one there. So they had a bunch of different ones.
Hold on. Let's take a little caveat here. The the record store, was that a startup from you, or did you purchase a record store?
No, I purchased it.
Okay.
It was called Volume, and it was here, I mean, ever since I was young. Ever since I was a kid, I remember when I was really young, we went to Volume because they had, which at that time was a big deal, they had the bootlegs.
Ah.
So, you know, I could go there and buy, like, Nirvana, like, you know, bootlegs of shows. And I know, you know what, they didn't call them, they called them imports at the time.
Right, yep.
I remember he had, like, an import section, which was basically like burned CDs.
Right. Yeah, but, essentially.
So there was a couple locations of it at that time.
Gotcha.
And then he was more of the older, just kind of businessman guy that once it wasn't like a booming business anymore, he just wanted out. So that's when I bought it from him.
I didn't know that. I don't know if anybody knew that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How'd you do for 3 years while you owned a record shop? That obviously was your full-time gig.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Really?
I mean, it was great. I loved it. And like we made, we did fine. We made decent money to stay there and live. But towards the end, it just started to really drop off. But it was definitely like a dream job. It was something I always wanted to do.
Yeah, it's killer.
So cool to be able to do it. It's one of those things where if I could walk right back in there today, I'd be all about it. I mean, it was awesome.
Did you do any, in-store shows or anything?
No, we didn't because we were in a shopping center.
Oh yeah. That doesn't
we work. Were right next to a Harris Teeter and right next to like a dentist. So we had done some like in-store signings and stuff like that, you know, where bands would come in before they played locally.
Okay.
And yeah, but no, we never had shows in there because of the location.
Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I did not know that. That's what you uncover when you start telling stories. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Back on track with the, now you're in Norma Jean.
Right. So, yeah, so I flew down to Atlanta and we rehearsed for a few days and then we did a really short tour just to like feel things out, make sure it was a good fit.
What era was this? What album did you tour on?
This was 07, so it was still Redeemer time.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, cool.
So we did a short tour and it went really well. We all had a good time and then came back and said, okay, you know, let's take a couple weeks off and then we'll start writing. So we started writing and we did the Anti-Mother record. And then it was a little awkward at times, I would say. Because in Spitfire, I would never say that in Spitfire, I was never the main writer or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't, but I was extremely involved in the writing and the composition and putting everything together from the music to the business to just everything. That was always what I did in Spitfire. So when I came into Norma Jean, it was different. And Corey is extremely, extremely talented musician and has a lot of stuff that he brings in that he hears a certain way. And I wasn't used to that because in the past for me, it was always like Matt would come in and say, hey, I have an idea. Or I would come in and say, I have some ideas or John or whoever. And we would put things together like that. And we did it that way a lot in Norma Jean, but a lot of times Corey would come in and not only have you know, half of a song done, but he would also say, and I have some ideas for the drums. I just was not used to that. Just a totally different way of doing things for me. So there was a couple times there where I think early on Corey and I kind of like butted heads on some of that. But
like in a healthy, I'm learning to grow in a new situation way, or like in a bad, this isn't going to work way.
No. And like a, healthy, like we got to figure out how we, you know what I mean?
He had
done it his way and I had done it. Yeah. But
the reason I asked it that way is because he speaks highly of you and recommended you. So it isn't like, I'm sure you didn't, you guys didn't leave and you were like, F you.
Oh, you know, nothing like that.
Right.
Never. Nothing like that. I think it was just like a growing thing, you know, like, I think it was a big change for them, for Daniel to not be there.
Sure. Definitely. Yeah, really. Yeah. Good point.
I think that was a big change. I mean, especially for Scotty and Chris, because they had only ever played with Daniel. Right. I don't know if those guys have ever played in their lives with a different drummer.
Not to the scale of Norma Jean, anyway. I mean,
right? But just David was around
since Ludacris, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And before that, you know. So, so it was like a transition. But the amazing thing was, like, the way that they treated me from the second I joined that band was just unheard of. It was just insane. Like, I mean, the second I came in, they made me a member. This is more like on a business level of things, but most bands don't work like that.
I want to talk about this side of it if you're willing to, because this is
absolutely
the whole, like, oh, what's it like to record in this cool studio? Like, who gives a shit? I want to talk about, like if they walked in and were like, here, you're an official member, explain what that meant. Because I know Norma Jean is like a, like, they're making money. They pay themselves. Like,
absolutely.
They work there.
Right? And this is, so what does this that mean? You know, Norma Jean has had differing levels of success over the years, including the beginning and including today, they're still successful. At that time, Norma Jean was very, very successful when Daniel quit. I think Oh God is probably their best-selling record, but I kind of always felt like Redeemer was their biggest record. It might not have literally sold as much, but also record sales go less and less and less every single year.
Sure, right.
So I kind of joined at like a peak time, and we were getting offered huge tours. We were doing Warped Tour. We were doing Mayhem Festival, all this stuff. And they just brought me right in. And I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't mind me saying this stuff, but like, they just literally cut me in on everything right off the bat. Decision-making. I mean, they like made me a brother in that band like immediately. And it was just amazing.
That has to be part of the fact that you and Scotty had the previous relationship. He was helping with Spitfire. He already knew you. You were trying. I mean, if they auditioned 10 guys and you happened to be the best fit of those 10 guys, I don't know if they would have, I don't know if the same deal would have been thrown on them a day later.
Possibly.
You know?
And that, I think, was part of too, which was a really cool thing, was that they, when they asked me, they said, we're not asking anyone else. I think Corey, you know, Corey and I spoke on the phone and he said, and this is another thing, cool thing too, is we all knew each other. It's not like they were like, oh, we know this guy, he plays drums in this band, Spitfire, that would be really cool. He would fit. Like, we all really knew each other. We were all buddies.
Right.
And, you know, like Corey had, I remember when we, one of the first times we spoke, he had said that we were both knit from the same cloth, I think was the expression he used.
Nice.
But he was absolutely right. I mean, we both just, we all of us, we just came from the same background. We liked the same things. It was just a really, really cool experience joining the band.
Sure.
The writing for Antimatter, like I said, was different at the time for me. I think for them as well. But it smoothed out. We recorded that record. It's a transition record for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly what Corey said.
When I talked to him. There's some really good stuff on there, but it was a rough time. I think it was a rough time because they lost Daniel, which maybe at the time they didn't say as much, but I think he was very important to them, not only as a bandmate, but as a brother, as a friend, you know?
Sure.
They had been together for so long, and I think he left on different terms. And then, you know, writing with a different person who's very strong. You know, I have strong thoughts like Corey does about the way a song should be or a way a part should be.
Right.
Corey was going through some rough things at the time, and then we went and recorded with Ross Robinson, which was a huge deal for me. But Ross was going through some things at the same time as well. So it just it made for some interesting times. But overall, like, I look back on those times, all great memories, and very thankful of what I was able to do. And, like, just, you know, again, like, the way I was brought into that band just could not have been any cooler.
Right. And it was about 3 years. About 3 years that you were in Norma Jean?
Yeah, I think just a hair over 3 years.
Okay. So yeah, you toured Redeemer, wrote and
recorded. Well, really just barely the tail end of Redeemer. Daniel did. Okay. He didn't leave the band until most of the Redeemer cycle was done.
Okay.
I just kind of caught the tail end, and then we did Anti-Mother and toured that.
Okay. So you based then, so then what so then what where was the exit from Norma Jean?
Well, then we did Meridional. That was like a big deal for us. We were all firing on all cylinders,
mm-hmm.
and like clicking like perfectly. Whether if it was Corey had brought in a completed song, which some of those songs on that record is. Now at that point, it would be more like Corey would bring in a song and it would be 90% done.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what it would be is I would put my drums to it. Scotty would put some of his flair to it, and then that would kind of complete a song.
Right.
Then there's some songs on the record that Scotty wrote, some songs that just Scotty and I wrote. Just Scotty and I would go to I'd get to Atlanta early a few times before Corey would get there, and Scotty and I would write. I think we wrote a couple songs together like that, mm-hmm. for Meridional. But the way that it all came together was just amazing. The record was a completely different vibe than when we did Anti-Mother. It was way more laid back. It was just a great, great experience.
Good.
The guy who recorded us, Jeremy Griffith, who we'll talk about him more in a minute because he actually mixed the new Sundrug record,
right,
that Jimmy and I just did. But he produced and engineered the Meridional record for us in Atlanta. And it's just something I'm really proud of. And I know those guys are too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the last record Scotty did as well. So, yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, it was really cool, and that whole experience was just amazing. I mean, we got to do so many cool things, and just really, like, a really, like, special time in my life.
Yeah. You know?
being in that band. And
yeah, and you get to hang Anti-Mother and Meridional on your wall next to the Spitfire albums. That's pretty
it's
cool.
Neat. Yeah, it's neat. So I guess from there, I'll just kind of get into why or when I left or why I left.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was either late 2010 or early 2011. We had the twins in 2009. So, you know, when you first have kids, they're just kind of like little aliens. and they just like kind of eat and poop and whatever.
Yeah,
So when I was leaving a lot early on, and my wife, you know, being amazing and supportive like she always was, it was hard, but it wasn't that hard to leave and go tour.
Mm-hmm.
But I was starting to come home and like seeing real little people,
yeah,
I guess
I got
could say.
Yeah.
And it got harder and harder. And we were on Mayhem Festival and we played Raleigh, I think. And we had a day off and then we were playing Virginia Beach. So I rented a car to get home as soon as I could to come home and be with my family for the few extra days that I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that and came home and it was this weird thing. Like, I just felt like my kids were like, they were like looking at me differently, you know, like it was, I just kind of had this weird thing where I was like, dang, like, this is real. Like, you know, it's getting really freaking hard to leave them. So I remember that day, like it was the first time that I was like, maybe I can't do this. Because I remember when my wife got pregnant, when they were first born, you know, some of the guys in the band saying like, are you going to, you know, you're going to stick with it, right? Like, you're in Norma Jean, right? And I'm like, oh gosh, yeah. Like, this is my job. This is my career. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
This is what I've always wanted to do. Like, we're doing great. Like, no way I'm going anywhere. And then this stuff, you know, kids, they change. They change you. It's crazy.
Preaching to the choir, buddy.
Yeah. Yep. So we did another tour or two. And then I actually told the band that I was leaving when we were in England.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, and they all understood and they still understand. I mean, I know it's a different group. It's actually a pretty different group of guys now besides Corey.
Sure.
In the band.
Yeah, really.
But they understood and Corey understood. I mean, Corey has kids. Corey totally understood. But it was hard. But it was at the time, I just felt like it was what I was supposed to do.
Gotcha.
And so yeah, that's pretty much
respect,
pretty much
man. That's a tough decision,
goes.
Man. That that has to be a biggie.
Yeah.
Gotta do it.
That's
gotta go home and be dad. You gotta go home and coach baseball.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So came home and started focusing on being a dad and coaching baseball doing the regular day to day. What do you do for a living after you quit Norma Jean?
So I came home and kind of didn't know what I was going to do. When I first left the band, there was this guy, an old friend of mine, who was going to kind of take me under his wing, and he was going to help me with kind of getting involved in the stock market world and all this stuff. It ended up just being like a lot of blown smoke, basically, and it didn't really work out. And so I had another friend, Mark, and he had been doing auto reconditioning. Basically, he was working for a company that worked for car dealerships where he goes in and he, you know, paints bumpers and he's buffing out scratches on cars,
okay,
touching up chips and things like that.
Yep.
So he was doing that for a while and enjoyed the job but hated who he was working for.
Ah.
So I just kind of said, you know, what would you think if, you know, if you quit and we just kind of, you teach me everything and I'll run the business end of things and we'll do it. And he immediately was like, let's do it. So, and this is a guy, I mean, he has five kids at the time. He had three or four at the time. So we went for it and we did it and we just kind of dropped everything and went out and got some car dealerships. And that was almost 5 years ago now.
And you're still doing it.
Still doing it, yeah.
Dude, you got some balls on you. Like, seriously, that's the second business that you did yourself. Like, the whole, like, I'm in a band, now I'm not in a band, I got to do something else, I'll buy a record store. Now I can't do Norma Jean anymore. I'm going to start teach me how to do the job and I'll start the business. That's an entrepreneurial level of guts that a lot of people, including myself, don't really have. That's some scary shit, man.
You know what it is, though? It is kind of scary, but more than anything, I can't work for anybody. I just can't. I can't buy into corporate world bullcrap and
gotcha.
It's not in me. It just eats me up so bad that I knew I would never work for anybody again. I knew there was no way it was going to happen.
See, there's one thing that I now know that I'm better at than you are is eating humble pie.
Yeah.
Because I do it every day. Yes, sir. Yeah,
that's right. So that was pretty much it. And we started doing that, and that's what I'm still doing now. Yeah.
How about it? Successful? Doing all right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's doing well.
I mean, the lights haven't flickered behind you, so I assume you're paying your bills, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's well. It's doing well, and I, for the most part, I enjoy it. I mean, there's some days that it's 30 degrees outside and it sucks, and there's some days that it's 100 degrees out and it sucks.
Bro, but, I hear you that. Yeah.
You know, I can't complain, and so it's brought me, to where I am now, and
you should see the bumper on my 2009 Ford Focus. Mike, made of plastic, and you drag your drums in and out of the trunk a couple times around you. It looks like I took a friggin' cheese grater over it, man.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we could work that out, man. We'll bring you down to Virginia Beach.
Dig it.
Do a little repair.
Yeah, that sounds all right. I could do that. Man, fast forward. Tell me about Sundrug. You and Jimmy reconnected, right?
Yep. Yeah. So Jimmy lived in Brooklyn for 8 or 9 years or so.
Okay.
We started playing, he was still living there. But basically he had done a lot of solo stuff. So when we were doing Self-Help and Cult Fiction, and then when I was in Norma Jean, he was doing his own thing. And I actually played some shows with him, which was really cool. Like, okay. You know, he would kind of say, hey, I don't have a drummer at the moment. You want to come to New York and play some shows? And so I did that with him. He did some solo stuff and did a band called Rome. So we did that. And then fast forward to, you know, I'm not Norma Jean anymore. I'm doing this business and stuff. And we just kind of kept saying, like, we got to do a band, which, understand this. And well, you're a musician, so you probably do.
I'm a drummer.
Talk is constant. I mean, like, I could text 50 people on my phone right now and be like, let's do a band. And they'd be like, heck yes, like, let's do it. You know what I mean? It's a musician thing. Like, I have friends in LA that I could text right now that, oh, we've got to do this band. Like, uh-huh. Oh, we're going to do it. And then I might not hear from them again for 2 years. So,
yeah.
It's just a funny thing, you know, like, and I think everybody means it. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many people that I would be like, oh, dude, if I could write some music with them, how cool would that be?
Right.
So Jimmy and I, you know, kept saying that. So he actually started taking this bus here to Virginia Beach from New York City on weekends so he could write, which was, I mean, that's not easy to do. Like, he would work during the week, get on a bus on, like, a Friday or a Thursday and come down here, and we'd write over the weekend, and he'd go back. So we did that off and on for a while, and completed a lot of stuff. We just didn't, like, really get to... I don't know. We just didn't get to a point where, like, we truly love this. This is what we want to do.
Right.
So we kind of didn't do it for a little bit. We wrote a ton of songs and then just kind of do it for a little bit. And then he, on his own, started writing again. He had sent me some stuff, and it was just a completely different vibe and completely more of what we were like, okay, this is what we've been wanting to do the whole time.
Okay.
So that was pretty much it. And then he moved back here a little over a year ago. He was just ready to get out of the city. He just kind of got burned out on living up there and came back here where his family is, and that was it. I mean, it was a different experience for me. We wrote a lot of the records sitting in front of a computer, which in my entire life, it's been me and four other guys in a small room, you know, mm-hmm. just hammering it out until we get songs that we like. And this time it was different. We didn't have a space at the time to play music. So we thought, well, let's do it this way. Just me and you, we've got the equipment. He knows how to record. That's what he does for a job. He's he actually writes music for commercials. And so,
oh, cool.
He has, you know, all that stuff already. So that's pretty much what we did. And then Jeremy Griffith, came to Norfolk and recorded the drums,
mm-hmm.
and we rented a studio here and recorded the drums, and then we went to Florida and mixed the record with him. And Andreas, who actually recorded the Self-Help record, he does records a lot of heavy stuff.
Andreas
Magnuson,
yes, very familiar.
He was in Scarlet as well.
I didn't know he was in Scarlet.
I know he's recorded a lot of heavy bands, mm-hmm. and I know a lot of people like sought after wanting to record with Andreas.
Yep.
So he's actually mastering it for us.
Cool.
And it's pretty much, the record's pretty much done now. That's where we're at. It's very different.
It's very electronic-y.
Yeah, it is, but it still has a lot of heavy overtones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to explain. I guess maybe we'll have a couple of those play through the podcast.
Yeah, you played. You sent me two songs, and I'm gonna wedge them in here somewhere.
Definitely. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at now. So we did the whole record, and we just recently put a band together.
I think it's kind of funny that guys around our age that played heavy music that are kind of doing music now, many of them went off on like a slightly electronic tangent. It just goes to show how much we were all listening to Nine Inch Nails.
No doubt.
And, you know what I'm saying? And it just,
absolutely.
Radiohead when they went weird. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like all that stuff mm-hmm. is starting to come out. And it just seems like there's less people in the bands. They've turned into more musical projects. There's more correspondence from people that live in different areas.
Sure.
It just starts to sound, it's got a little computer in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's more possible now with technology,
exactly.
too.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, which is a huge thing. And we definitely didn't start writing this stuff and say, oh, we've got to sound like Nine Inch Nails or this right. or that. But, like, I mean, that's a band that we're in love with.
Sure.
You know? So,
yeah.
There's definitely elements of that there.
And he plays, yeah. and what is he doing in Sundrug?
Jimmy can pretty much do anything. He's one of those kind of just ridiculously talented musicians.
Okay.
But basically, for the purposes of writing and everything else, he's just, not writing, but playing live now that we've put a band together and stuff. He's mainly just playing guitar and singing.
Gotcha. And you have a full band. Sundrug's a live band.
Yeah, we just put a band together.
Gotcha.
So right now it's Jimmy and I. And then we have a keyboard player, we have another guitar player, and then we have another bass player who also does a lot of synths and things like that.
Very cool. Okay, yeah. Wow. Sundrug's a thing. Yeah. Are you guys
a thing.
Just an independent, doing it yourselves, playing out and having fun? Are you guys on a label? Are you guys going to tour?
Not sure yet. Not sure. We really just wanted to do the record.
Okay.
You know, it was Jimmy and I's vision to just do this record, give it to a lot of people, and see, you know, if there's any interest out there, and if somebody wants to release it, that'd be killer. We just don't really know right now. We just really wanted to do the record, and then we realized, you know, now we just really want to put this band together and start playing some shows, and you know, just there's just a lot of people I want to hear it. So I'm really looking forward to getting it 100% done, so I can give it to some friends and, you know, get some people's feedback on it.
I like it. I mean, I'm not an electronic-y guy, but
yeah.
The stuff you sent me was definitely, it'll tickle the metal post-hardcore
For sure.
side. It'll scratch that itch. I feel the same the same vein with the heavy music and everything is heading in this direction, where
yeah.
it's kind of turned into kind of like, for instance, the Knives project that
Chino did.
No, that's Crosses. I was meaning the Project 86 and the
Ryan Clark.
Yes, I was.
Yes,
how Knives has the same sort of heavy Depeche Mode kind of a vibe to it.
For purposes of this podcast, can we call Ryan Clark Maven and Maven only?
Sure, I don't know what that means, but you're in charge, buddy.
Well, that is true, and we used to joke around a lot because if you look in the early Training for Utopia releases, he actually gave himself the name Maven.
I didn't.
Instead of Ryan Clark.
I didn't know that. Why?
So, I don't know. I have no idea. But we like to call him Maven around here. So we'll just stick with that. If Ryan ever listens to this, he's probably going to be pissed because I haven't talked to him in years. And I want everybody to call him Maven.
Good.
Yeah.
Maybe that will draw him to my podcast and he'll have to come on and defend himself. And then I get to be like, I got the dude from Demon Hunter on, you know? That might work.
Yeah. you totally could. And we have another thing that maybe we could have some kind of like prank call podcast, because we have just tapes and tapes of prank calls from like Dead Next Door era. Like
what?
I mean, oh, dude, it's insane. I mean, it's everyone from like people that worked at Tooth and Nail to Ryan Clark to like Nate Newton from Converge.
What?
Dillinger guys.
How do you not have this out?
It's good, dude. There's some really good
Your stuff. Entrepreneurial spirit didn't at one point go, you know what? I should.
Here's the funny thing. We had, who else did we prank? Bruce. Oh, there's some really good one pranks of Bruce.
Come on. Here's the thing, too.
A lot of these guys don't know. We never told them later. But the funny thing is we wanted, remember the old days of CDs and like an extra track?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a hidden track, like that was
buried
like a cool
track.
Thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, on Dead Next Door, we were going to have all the prank calls.
Oh.
And at the last minute, somebody at Tooth and Nail was like, nope, not happening. So that's
why.
So I don't know. So they're not there, but we still have them all. And there's some good stuff in there.
I don't know anything about the legal repercussions or anything, but dude, I will help you produce that thing. We could somehow combine some
drug
and the podcast, and we'll do that.
It would be amazing.
That I would love to hear those. That's fantastic.
We could just go through them, talk about them.
Tell me.
Yeah, all right, let me do a couple. Let me do some digging.
You do some digging, but I know that you're thinking of a couple off the top of your head. Give me a couple examples.
I remember, at the time, I don't think Nate Newton was in Converge yet. I think he was just in Jesuit. Did you hear? Have you heard Jesuit?
Yeah.
they were a band from here, another band that was like a huge influence on Spitfire when we were young.
Okay.
But
I never connected those two, to be honest. Yeah. I just did that now. Okay, cool.
And so Nate and Brian Benoit were both from here.
Okay.
Brian was in Dillinger for a while as well. Anyway, so I remember one of the pranks was we had pranked Nate Newton, just basically offering, you know, we wanted to have Jesuit come play, but there was no way we could pay them. But, you know, I think it was something ridiculous like, but my mom makes, like, insane meatballs. Like, if you guys come out here, like, you'll get these meatballs. And you have Nate on the other end, like, being too nice, you know, not just being like, all right, whatever, it's later. Like, just, you know, kind of being like, okay, are you serious? You know, like, stuff like that.
Right.
One of the really good ones, you got to hear these, though. One of the really good ones.
I do have to hear these.
Matt prank called Tooth and Nail and said that he ordered the Training for Utopia. Gosh, what was their EP called? Like, that amazing first thing they ever put out.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, yeah, yeah. The
Falling Cycle.
Yep.
So he had called Tooth and Nail and said, I ordered the Falling Cycle. And just on this awful, like, New York accent. I ordered the Falling Cycle, and you sent me a record. Like, what the hell am I going to do with this record? Like, I ordered a CD, and you sent me, like, a Frisbee to play with my dog. Like, I have no idea what the hell you want me to do this thing. And the guy on the other end is just clueless, you know, and they're, like, sending him around to different places. Well, let me send you over to mail order, and, like, because they just don't know what to do. So he goes back and forth with him. I mean, these aren't as near as funny when you try to just tell.
I get that it's losing something in translation, but just the fact that these exist is making me smile ear to ear. We got to get a couple of these up.
We could. And you know who I think has probably some of the funniest things you've ever heard, and another person you should absolutely have on this podcast, is Jason Hammaker from Frotis.
Yeah, I already spoke to Shelby.
Okay.
That'd be killer.
Jason is, I mean, one of the best storytellers of all time.
I've heard numerous people say that, he's infectious. I love the guy.
Yes.
He's kind of insane. He's the funniest dude ever.
Yes.
Ring him up.
Nice. He has some awesome prank calls, but his are more ridiculous, like him prank calling, like, Gordon Liddy's, like, talk show in D.C. and stuff like that. Like, just ridiculous stuff. He's Jason's genius, though.
Okay, I mean, all right.
He's hilarious. But yeah, I'll have to dig some stuff
up. Do you have any of this audio accessible at all?
Right here?
Not right now, but I mean, like that you can send me, I will somehow shove it under this podcast.
I guarantee you a lot of it's on cassette tape.
Okay.
Because we actually had, like, an old cassette tape recorder with one of those little, like, suction cup things that you would suction on the back of the phone.
Oh my God. Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah.
So that's I've never used one. I've only seen them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we used to, I mean, this is,
that's like CIA stuff, dude.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But that's funny. This is like pre even those days, like, of all that stuff. Matt would, like, spend the night at my house, you know, when we were, like, in high school, and we would just stay up all night pranking people. And the sad thing is, a lot of times it was literally like, get the church directory, and we'll start at the letter A, and we'll just, like, annihilate people till we fall asleep. I mean, we would prank call. That was like our thing. We just
people in your own church.
Oh, dude, it was brutal.
What do you do? What do you call? Just randomly call some dude that begins with A. What do you call the guy at church about?
I don't even remember at this point. I mean, I remember there was this one really weird old guy that was a missionary, and he would, like, you wouldn't see him forever, and then he'd come up, you know, he'd come back from whatever country he was
right.
Just, like, crazy stories. And I remember he'd one time at church, we kept talking about this tiger or something. So one of the pranks we used to do a lot was, get your dog out of my yard. Your dog's barking. You know, people with or without dogs. So I remember we used to call that guy and tell him that his tiger was in my yard and he has to come get it right now, or I'm calling calling animal control, or I'm calling the cops or whatever. Just stupid stuff like that, man. I have no idea. I mean, we were like 15, you know, maybe 14, 15, maybe 16 years old, like, with a suction cup microphone, and we just pranked everybody we could prank.
I love it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's at all possible, man, if you can convert any cassette tape calls over and send the MP3 to me, I'll definitely show. Dude, Bruce, oh my God, I would love a prank call from Bruce.
I can't remember what we prank. I will say this. I do remember, I don't remember the prank, but I do remember we told Bruce it was us, and Bruce very seriously said, you cannot use this.
Okay.
But that was a long time ago. That was like 16 years ago.
I know Bruce listens to this podcast. He's been on it twice. So
he might not even remember.
He might
we
not.
I remember when we pranked Bruce, we were at Track C's. We were recording Dead Next Door. And they were, I don't know, maybe they were mixing or I don't know. So we went into another room. We went into the office at Track C's and we're pranking people. And
using their phone.
Yeah, using their phone. I remember. I don't remember what we pranked Bruce about, but I know we pranked Bruce, and I remember at the end me saying, "Hey, it's Chris. You know, we want to." At the time, we were going to put it on as an extra track, and I was like, "Can we?" And he was like, "No, you can't."
Oh my gosh, that's too funny.
Yeah, but I mean, that was so long ago. First, Bruce might not remember, and second, now he'd probably be like, "Oh, dude, that'd be awesome. Like, I'd love to hear it."
I bet he would. That's what I'm saying. I bet. I bet in the context of all this, he'd probably be like, "Yeah, dude, I don't care. Go ahead."
Totally. Yeah.
Too funny.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love it. Why are the drummers always the ones that are causing trouble?
And I totally forgot how he was pronounced it though. But Corey was talking about the working titles, you know. Y'all kept talking about
Spadoinkle Mode.
Yeah, Spadoinkle Mode. Uh-huh. Which I don't know because that was the record after me. That was Wrongdoers, I think.
Okay,
Spadoinkle Mode. But dude, yeah, the working titles we had were just stupid.
Throw me a couple.
Oh gosh, it's been so long. You know,
you keep doing that. You keep bringing up funny stories and then saying, I don't remember.
Dude, I can't remember.
You're killing me.
I don't know if he said this or not, but some of those really did become real song titles. Like, there's some songs on Meridional that were working titles on Anti-Mother. Bastardizer
okay.
was a working title. There was another one, too. Okay, I remember one of the working title. Crap, I wish I could call. Scotty's out of town. Scotty lives in Atlanta. I live in Virginia, but he's out of town this weekend. But I was going to conference him. I would think it would be hilarious to get him in on this at some point. Oh, he's out of town.
It would be great.
There was one song that one working title was Boner Donor, and then in parentheses, I Want to Be Your. That was one of my favorite
classy
working titles.
The title of this podcast. Might be Boner Donor.
It might need to be.
It might need to be now. It might need to be. It's that funny. You're going to end on something.
But Corey,
like that.
Corey has all those boards. Like I think he said when you did your podcast with him.
He
like
said he has them. Yeah.
Yeah, we did. You know, every time we did a record, we had these huge marker boards, and we would like draw lines across
uh-huh.
and put working titles in, and then across the board was, you know, how far we got in the song, ideas for when we record, what do we need, what are we missing. All that kind of stuff. So all those working titles are on there. And I don't remember a lot of them, but Scotty would probably remember them all because also it's possible Scotty came up with most of them. But yeah, Boner Donor's a good one.
That's classy. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. It's very classy.
You guys thought of that in church?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
This has been a killer visit, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah. If you can find any prank calls, ship them over.
Yeah.
If you got sure. you got any more sun drugs, ship it on over.
I will. The record when the record's done, which should be very soon, I'll send it all.
Beautiful. Thanks for coming on, Chris. This
yeah,
is awesome.
Dude. It was awesome.
Yeah. This is a lot of fun. When's the last time you did a podcast?
Norma Jean.
Okay, good.
Yeah. For sure. It's been a long time. I mean, I haven't done, until the sun drug thing, I haven't done a whole lot. This is another thing. I don't know if we're already done or not, but this is
I don't know
like
either.
An interesting thing. This is another like interesting part of the story, though, is when I left Norma Jean, I've been spoiled. I played music with my best friends my whole life.
Yeah.
So, like, sorry. I grew up playing with Matt and Jimmy and then with John and Dan. And then I joined Norma Jean. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like I've only played with like guys that I like absolutely love,
mm-hmm.
have a blast with, and like write awesome music with. When I left Norma Jean and came back here, I was immediately like, "Look, I can't do that anymore." But I'm gonna still play music. And I came back and tried to play with a lot of people. But there's two things. There's either I played with people who the music was pretty cool, but I just felt like there's nothing there.
Okay.
Between us.
Okay.
You know, nice enough guys, whatever.
Yeah.
And then there were some guys that I played with that I was like, I love these dudes, but this music is not me.
Gotcha.
So it's like literally I was spoiled to be able to play with like such talented people that were like my best friends.
I've talked about that before too, where sometimes it isn't the most technical drummer. Sometimes it isn't the best vocalist. Sometimes it isn't the guitar guy. You all have to be good at being in a band together.
No doubt.
And that's just about all of it, because honestly, nobody's reinventing the wheel out there. If you need another guitarist, you can find one. If you need somebody to scream, dude, who doesn't? You know what I mean? But if the five of you are just cats in a bag, it's gonna self-destruct. You got to get good at being good at each other, you know?
You know how you have certain friends that you might not have talked to in a long time, but you know and they know that if you went and hung out with him tonight, you'd be like, dude, it's like we had never missed a minute.
Right.
Like, that's how it is with all those guys. Like, if for some reason I woke up tomorrow and I had never quit Norma Jean or Spitfire never had stopped, it would not be any different.
Yeah, man.
It'd be the exact same. If I walked into where we practiced in Atlanta right now, it would be the exact same thing.
Right.
We would just all have an awesome time, and yeah.
Just the way it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good note to end, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, Chris. That was awesome.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.